The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. We start today's show with a few words from azquotes.com. In 2 decades, I've lost a total of 789 pounds. I should be hanging from a charm bracelet. Irma Bombeck. I tried every diet in the book. I tried some that weren't in the book. I tried eating the book. It tasted better than most of the diets. Dolly Parton. Yes, my dear listeners, we are very quickly heading into hotter weather, longer days, and eek, tighter pants. Sounds like it is perfect time for us to start getting really serious about getting healthier. Great news! Today we hear from authors who can help us kick our efforts to the next level by reminding us to eat our fruits and vegetables, get plenty of exercise, and remember to pick up mint ice cream from the store. Wait, what? Let's start there. From the book Shaun of the South, Whistling Dixie, written by Sean Dietrich and published in 2016, the motivating chapter, Summer Slim Down. In celebration of summer, you'll do what everyone does. You'll walk into your closet and try to squeeze into a pair of pants you wore last year. But wait, something's wrong. You've been eating mint chocolate chip ice cream all winter, and it's finally caught up with you. When your wife notices your tight pants, she'll make a comment as tenderly as she can. Honey, she'll say, those jeans are crawling clear up the crack of your... Anyway, normally, you'd get defensive over such a remark, except you can't breathe. So, you slam your fist and tell yourself, this is my life, damn it. It's time to regain control. You start by skipping breakfast, a time-honored dieting tactic employed by geniuses everywhere. After all, who needs breakfast? All those biscuits just slow you down. You can reward yourself with some clear broth for lunch. But when noon hits, you've already cussed the plumber, kicked a hole in the sheetrock, and now you're eating mint chocolate chip out of the carton. Plan B, exercise. Some folks wake up and run 50 miles. Not we normal stiffs. We need social motivation, a reason to work out. Maybe try enrolling in an exercise class, thereby drawing positive energy from your better-looking peers. You have two choices here. A, yoga. B, organized medieval torture set to techno music. You choose Zumba, which is a room full of chipper people who have the God-given ability to salsa dance semi-professionally. You give it your best shot and dance like a wild man, even though technically playing air guitar isn't dancing. Moving on. It stands to reason, since other methods haven't worked, it's time to cut out solid food altogether. After buying a $700 blender, voila, a delicious regimen that actually works. For breakfast, cucumber smoothie. Easy. Lunch, carrot puree with parsley. Snap. Dinner, mint chocolate chip from the carton, one block of cheese, 2 Twinkies, and a Budweiser. And now I want to be serious for a moment. After going through several dietary failures, cheer up. You'll find a solution. It might even occur to you while in dance class, gyrating to Gloria Estefan. You'll kick yourself for not thinking of it sooner. Somewhere deep inside you, you'll realize you can do whatever you set your mind to. Then you can put a smile on your face, slam your fist, and say, this is my life. It's time to regain control. Now, call your wife and have her swing by the store. You're out of mint chocolate chip. Well, folks, don't worry if you buy too much mint ice cream. There is always the chance to do better next time. Okay, seriously, dieting has often been proved to be ineffective compared to, say, getting some activity. Ever try to take up running? Ever try multiple times? If you've said yes, you are a true trooper, and you are in good company. Our next story is of perseverance, which is important with exercising. Lots and lots of perseverance sometimes. From the book, I Need a Lifeguard Everywhere But the Pool, written by Lisa Scottolini and Francesca Saratella, published in 2017, Francesca's chapter, Running on Empty. I don't think my body was made for running. I took a human evolution class in college, and the professor presented his theory that early humans evolved as a species because our bodies were uniquely suited to long-distance running. Our quick, cooling, slender body shape, our flexible cervical spine keeping our head steady with our body in motion, and other traits allowed us to successfully hunt large prey animals like zebras by simply chasing them for long distances in the hot sun until they collapsed from exhaustion. I must have descended from the zebras. My body type as a little girl was the sort that made people say, unprompted, "Kids grow out, then up." They were mostly right, but I could have used some extra inches up. I wasn't unathletic. I was very into horseback riding, the only sport you can do sitting down. But running has always been a slog. I used to dread the mile test in gym class. I'd try my hardest, but my lungs would burn, my sides quickly cramping with a stitch. Yet, every spring, I make a half-hearted attempt to get into running. I long to be one of those people who craves a run. I want the trim body, the quick calorie burn, the endorphin rush. You know, the results. But after a winter of hunkering down on various deadlines and letting my fitness go by the wayside, and a little on the backside, but I'm mostly bothered by the middle front side, I decided I just had to do it. I would learn to love running through sheer will. First, I tried to buy enthusiasm. I ordered new, custom-colored Nike sneakers to trick myself into getting excited about cardio. I went for an inaugural run full of optimism. But even my optimism was out of shape. After a half hour, my left knee hurt so badly, I could barely walk home. Everyone said I probably had the wrong sneakers. The wrong, unreturnable, custom sneakers. So I went to a running store called Jackrabbit, another animal better suited to running than I am. I brought my dog Pip for moral support. The salesman asked me to jog on a treadmill while he filmed my feet in order to analyze my stride. He held onto Pip's leash while I did so. As soon as I began to run, Pip lost his mind. My normally mellow pup barked his head off as if the treadmill were trying to kill me. I always said he was smart. The salesman showed me the video, shaky as it was, thanks to Pip's freakout, but even I could see my ankle collapsing inward with every step. He shook his head and informed me that I am a serious overpronator. In addition to my wonky stride, my arches are too high, and I run slightly duck-toed, all of which adds to my knee pain. Over $100 later, I was the new owner of bulky stability sneakers, advanced orthotic inserts, and an inferiority complex. How is it possible that I'm so naturally bad at my species' seminal advantage? Maybe my running genes have been watered down by my Italian heritage, generations of breeding that favors painting, riding, and other butt-based activities. Italian cardio is mostly wild gesticulation. Our endurance is judged by one's ability to stand in a hot kitchen. I once fried 65 meatballs in a galley kitchen in July using only a 10-inch pan. Where is my medal? But that's my background. The American in me is a relentless striver. so I'm lacing up for another miserable run. Here's hoping I can evolve. And speaking of evolution, our last two stories are all about those key ingredients to healthy living, fruits and vegetables, even if they aren't really all we'd like them to be. First up from the book, Food, A Love Story, written by Jim Gaffigan and published in 2014, the chapter, Nobody Really Likes Fruit. Recently, I saw an apple, and for a moment, I didn't recognize it. Just for a second, I was like, what is that? A paperweight? Oh, it's an apple. It's so weird not to see it in a pie. I'm not proud of this, but let's be honest. Nobody really wants fruit. We only act like we do. A false desire for fruit is woven into the fabric of our culture. We are told that Adam and Eve were kicked out of paradise for eating an apple. An apple? Would an apple ever really tempt you? I would have looked at the serpent and said, an apple? Cover it in caramel and come back to me. You got any cake back there? Sure, some people will eat it if there's nothing else around. But given the other options, fruit just isn't that great. Even when people seem excited to see fruit, they are really just relieved it's not vegetables. Fruit involves too much work. You have to wash it. You have to remove that sticker Al-Qaeda put on there. There's work with fruit. Think about the orange. Has peeling an orange ever really been worth it? I always think, there's not even chocolate in this thing. Yet, some people still imagine they like fruit. Some weirdos even convinced everyone that the gathering of fruit is a fun activity. Once a friend excitedly asked me, why don't we go apple picking? Because I'd rather die. You have to pay to pick apples? Okay, how much do I owe you to work for you for free? Don't rip me off. I'm no dummy. Once in my pre-genie life, I dated a woman who made me go blueberry picking. One August, she said to me, I think I'd like to go blueberry picking. Maybe we should go blueberry picking? I remember thinking, no, no way. They can't even get migrant workers to do that. Yet, like 10 seconds later, there I was in upstate New York, picking blueberries. I remember thinking, what happened? What am I doing here? The whole experience was much worse than it sounds. Picking blueberries is not like picking pumpkins. It's not like, hey, I got one. Let's get the hell out of here. With blueberries, you are never done. Even after 3 hours, you tell yourself things like, I got four. We could make a muffin. There's got to be a machine to do this. It's no surprise that I broke up with that woman after that fun date. Irreconcilable differences. This insane fruit-acquiring behavior is because we think we like fruit, like it's some prize rewarding us for our labor. Upon further analysis, this is most certainly not the case. We don't actually like fruit. Why did the fruit cocktail disappear? Simple. It was horrible. When you think about it, has a strawberry ever lived up to expectations? I'm convinced strawberries never tasted good, but just had fantastic public relations. Dip it in chocolate and no one will even notice that it's a fruit. If honeydew melons disappeared from the planet, would anyone even notice? We would just continue to eat prosciutto like God intended us to. Nobody really wants fruit. That is why there are so many paintings in museums of just bowls of fruit. You could even start painting a bowl of fruit, leave for a couple of hours or even days, and when you came back, no one would have touched the bowl of fruit. On the other hand, if you're painting a donut, you better finish it on the first sitting. You can't even take a bathroom break. Upon returning, you might ask, "Hey, what happened to my donut?" Your friend with a full mouth will exclaim, I don't know, some fat guy ran in here. Well, I'm going to go get some milk and take a nap. This also explains why there is no donut art. When was the last time we saw a painting of a donut? The subject always gets eaten. Sad, really. I think anyone would love a painting of a donut. Dunkin' Donuts just has two D's in their logo and no picture of a donut. Why? It's pretty clear to me that someone ate it before they had a chance to capture the image. Do I have to explain everything? Edible arrangements. At some point during the turn of the last century, it became acceptable for people to send cut fruit arranged like flowers. I'd like this to stop. I understand you might find nothing wrong with someone sending you a beautiful arrangement of fruit on a stick that you eventually throw out. I realize that instead of sending flowers to say congratulations or sorry for your loss, people want to send these expensive fruit arrangements. But frankly, I find it unsanitary. Cut fruit always seems like it's on the verge of going bad. Our deepest sympathy for your impending diarrhea. I always imagine the person arranging the cut fruit display in a robe watching the view and occasionally sneezing. And honestly, why do edible arrangements have to be fruit? Can't you just send me a bouquet of meatballs? And next, also from Food, A Love Story, the chapter, Even Fewer People Like Vegetables. If nobody wants fruit, even fewer people want vegetables. This is because, overall, vegetables taste horrible. Don't believe me? Why then are we surprised when vegetables taste good? Oh my God, this beet is delicious! We are surprised because the expectation is that vegetables will taste like, well, vegetables. People eat vegetables. But nobody wants to eat vegetables. Think back to the last time you ate a vegetable. Did you want to eat the vegetable? Be honest. Maybe it was part of a healthy choice you made. I'll eat some carrots. Congrats on that healthy choice. But don't confuse a healthy choice with a desire to eat a vegetable. I mean, I don't want to be fat, but I want vegetables less. Of course, I'm forced to eat vegetables when there are children present. Parents dishonestly announce how good vegetables are in front of young children, hoping that because of the youngster's absence of life experience and sheer stupidity, they will be tricked into liking them. The lie that vegetables are good usually expires around the same time as the belief in Santa and the notion that adults actually know what they're doing. Let's say that I'm wrong. Maybe you do want to eat a vegetable. Let's now subtract deep frying, vinegar, dairy, oil, or an unhealthy amount of salt from the vegetable. Do you still want the vegetable? If you say no, you are like me. If you said, "Yes, Jim, I love eating raw radishes by the handful," you are a weirdo and probably need therapy. Okay, I'm jealous. Mostly, I've found that vegetables must be deep-fried, drowned in vinegar, or covered with some form of dairy or salt to have any appeal. Even at that point, the improvement is very minimal. It's staggering, the exertion that is put into making vegetables appealing. I'd like to applaud the effort behind grilled vegetables, but I'm pretty sure everyone finds them soggy and a waste of precious grill space. At their best, vegetables are the sidekicks. The opening band you didn't come to see at the concert. The asparagus next to the steak. The expectation is that the entree is so good, you won't notice that you are eating mutant blades of grass. There is no better sidekick than the potato, mostly in deep-fried form. Even so, potatoes, like corn, are fake vegetables. And a great excuse to your wife if you eat a lot of fries and tortillas. I had so many veggies today, honey. The vegetable tray. Occasionally, raw, naked, unenhanced vegetables are shamelessly presented as if they are actually desirable. This is the case with the elaborate vegetable party tray. When you are at a party and there is a vegetable tray, aren't you a little surprised? I always think, wow, that's a waste of money. A tray of vegetables at a party almost makes me sad. Here is a meticulously arranged tray of neatly cut vegetables for someone to throw out at the end of the night. I think crudité is a French term meaning tossed in lay garbage at the end of lay party. The only thing that raw vegetables have ever been good for is the careers of hummus and ranch dressing. The vegetable tray reflects very poorly on the short-sighted host of the party you are attending. Who is throwing this party? A nutritionist? Peter Rabbit? Is this a party or a Weight Watchers meeting? You know they are just there for decoration. Who doesn't want to look at pretty colors while scarfing down pigs in a blanket? But actually eat the raw vegetable decoration? Hell, I'd rather eat a candle. What? I'm the only one here who eats the occasional candle at parties? Why do you think they're scented? I almost feel sorry for the vegetables on the tray. They don't stand a chance against the other party appetizers. I know what it feels like to be the cauliflower next to the chips and guacamole. I've been to the beach and been the pale guy next to the tan bodybuilder. It's not a good feeling. Cauliflower, what the hell am I doing on this table? I can't compete with a bowl of peanut butter-filled pretzels, as if that ranch dressing is going to help sell me. Some of us have to settle down with the ranch dressing. The usage is getting out of control. I can't help it. I love ranch dressing. I like to dip my pizza in ranch dressing. That's fine. You are just not allowed to vote anymore. Ranch dressing is rather pathetic, really. After all, it's made from buttermilk and sadness. Prior to ranch dressing, nobody had ever eaten a raw vegetable. Throughout history, mankind has always known that vegetables were primarily put on this earth for decoration. Farmhand, done with the harvest, nobody is eating the Indian corn. Farmer, feed it to the cows. Farmhand, they don't want it either. Farmer, throw it on the front porch next to the gourd and jack-o'-lantern and remind me not to grow it next year. Types of vegetables. A list of different types of vegetables reads like the roster of attendees at an international conference for the barely edibles. Brussels sprouts. Clearly some kind of cruel joke by God. Bell pepper. Probably what makes cooked bell peppers so special is that they can ruin the taste of any dish they are in. Green, red, yellow, or orange peppers, you can change the color, but when I see one, I prepare for disappointment. Green is by far the worst of the culprits. Green peppers can make the best steak taste bitter and a grown man cry. Radish. Interesting fact, no one has ever really wanted to eat more than one radish in a lifetime. Radishes are a fascinating example of how something can be both tasteless and burn your tongue at the same time. Celery. Celery better get buffalo wings a great holiday present every year. Squash. The name says it all. Pretty much the only thing that can squash my appetite. Cauliflower. The unpainted broccoli impersonator. Imposter. Asparagus. Most interesting thing about asparagus is how fast it makes your peas smell like asparagus. Zucchini. The cucumber's ugly and disappointing cousin, similar to what the raisin cookie is to the chocolate chip cookie. Cucumber. The cucumber is just a pickle before it started drinking. Pickles and hot peppers. It seems whenever I identify a green vegetable I enjoy, it is a pickled vegetable or hot pepper. Pickles are so good, you'd be thinking being in a pickle would be a good thing. Actually, a great thing. Pickles are delicious. Imagine a Cuban sandwich without a pickle. Wait, don't do it. It's a sad thought, actually. A Cuban sandwich without the pickle is just a ham and cheese sandwich with a slab of pork. Who would ever order that? Well, I guess I would. But I am a unique case. If a pickle can define a meal, a hot pepper is there to overpower one. The hot pepper is the marching band symbol of vegetables. It's like, this is a pretty tasty sandwich. Wow, hot pepper! The super hot food thing is weird. It's like, eat this thing that will burn off your nose hairs and kill all your taste buds to make the food better. It's surprising that we don't put thumbtacks on our beds to enjoy our sleep more. But for me, hot peppers are highly addictive. I seem to have an abusive relationship with hot peppers. I probably need a support group. I know what they are going to do to me, yet I cannot resist them. At night, I'm all, yay, jalapenos. The next morning, I'm all, boo, jalapenos. Still, like a true codependent, I am the person who willingly keeps going back to the abusive relationship. I don't want to give too much information, but there were probably eating jalapenos the night before writing the Johnny Cash song, Ring of Fire. Still, I would much prefer to suffer the after effects of an exciting hot pepper than eat a boring vegetable. What am I, a monk? As a society, I am sure we can all agree that vegetables should be removed from their classification as actual food. I am pretty confident that the food experts agreed, because they are giving us subliminal anti-vegetable messages. I think that the secret engineers of the food pyramid design are the Masons. They hate vegetables too, right? Let's just admit the truth. After all, what is most people's worst fear besides death? You got it. Ending up a vegetable. And we round out today's show with these reminders about health and eating healthy, found on azquotes.com. The only time to eat diet food is while you're waiting for the steak to cook. Julia Child. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may diet. Kathy Hopkins. We run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number, one more time, is 919-832-5138. We thank you very much for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.